As many of you know, I am a person who has had a long time interest in poetry. And that started when I was a child. It started with reading children's books of poems. And then when I was in high school, I encountered a poem by Percy Shelley that I'm going to share with you in a minute. Imagine, if you will, that you're wandering in the deserts of the Middle East, and you come upon what had been a statue, a huge statue. The only thing still standing are the legs. The torso is gone. The head lies broken and cracked over to the side. And as you get closer, you can see there's something written on it. In the poem, you'll learn what was written on it. Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, in despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. Ozymandias thought he was pretty hot stuff, didn't he? And yet now that statue he erected to himself has fallen into disrepair. Nothing but the legs remain standing. The torso is one on one side. The face cracked on the other. And all you can see of the face is that sneer of cold command. And he was boasting. Look upon these, ye mighty, in despair. It's interesting that in the ancient world, that's the way greatness was defined. Seriously. If you remember in the book of Esther, the king is reading the chronicles of the Medes and the Persians. Actually, he's having it read to him. And he hears in the story about someone who did a favor for him, actually saved his life by breaking up a plot to kill him. And he asks, would we ever do anything for this person? And the reader says, no. And so the king decides that he's going to have this person on a horse led through the streets and someone leading the horse to shout to everyone who can hear how great the person on the horse is, how he saved the life of the king. So the king calls his chief advisor in, a man named Haman. He starts describing what he's going to do. He says, we're going to put someone on a horse, someone who has done me a great good deed. We're going to put them on a horse. We're going to lead them through the street. We're going to have somebody leading that horse. And they're going to be shouting about how great that person is. Haman thinks it's him. It's not. It's his arch enemy, Mordecai, the guy he despises. And so in a reversal, Haman, the chief advisor to the king, who already thinks he's great, gets to lead the horse on which Mordecai, who is just some Jewish guy there in this kingdom, some exile, and shouting all the way the greatness of his arch enemy. You see, in the ancient world, if you were great, you were expected to tell everybody about it. You were expected to boast about it. I should be up here telling you what a great preacher I am, all evidence to the contrary, notwithstanding, to try to convince you of my greatness. That's what was expected. That's how honor was conveyed. What Jesus does is to take that and turn it completely upside down. You see, as they're walking along here, The disciples are arguing about who's going to be greatest when Jesus comes into his power and his kingdom. And they're defining great the way Haman did, okay? They're the ones who will be led through the streets, and everybody will cheer them, and everybody will tell how great they are, and they'll be able to tell everyone how great they are. And Jesus says, no, you got it wrong. You've got it completely wrong. Upside down wrong. You see, anyone who's great among you will be a servant. And anyone who wants to be the greatest will be the servant of all. Now that doesn't make any sense to them. It wouldn't. In that time, in that place, in that culture, they were looking for Ozymandias. Okay? They had Haman's expectations of glory. Not what Jesus was talking about. I mean, after all, who is greater? The people who sit at that nice restaurant being served wonderful food, or the people who are waiting on them? You know the answer to that. It was true then, it's true today. The people sitting at the table being waited on, right? Not according to Jesus. According to Jesus, it's the people who are waiting on the tables who are the greatest. That's where we get the word deacon. The Greek word is diakoneia. It means literally to wait on tables. Jesus takes the expectations of his time and turns them in such a way that the only way you can be great in his eyes is to be of service to others. Like my friend Minnett. He works in a hardware store. But in all that he does, he serves. As much by the way he does it as by the actual actions that he takes. Now, our time is not that much different from those times, except in those days, they didn't have a 24/7 news cycle to tell us who's the greatest at the moment and sing the praises of those who are rich or those who are powerful, those who are politically placed. I mean, we have that. Nobody has to lead you through the streets on a horse anymore because we invite that into our homes on a regular basis. But Jesus would say, you know what? Those aren't the folks who are really great. You want to look for the really great folks? They're the folks who are out there serving. They're the folks who are out there doing what I told them to do and following the example that I gave them. The most radical example comes in the Gospel of John when he's gathered around the table with his disciples for the last meal they'll have together. And Jesus gets up and takes off his outer garment, ties a towel around his waist, and begins to wash their feet. That's something that a slave does. And so Jesus takes the place of the slave in that household and says, I've done this for you. Now you do it for each other. They're all astonished. Peter is offended by the very idea of it because they still don't get it. Sometimes we still don't get it. And yet, many of you are out there serving. I know you are. I may not know where. Some of you I may know, but there are a lot of you out there serving in ways that I have no idea about. You're feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the sick, those in prison, clothing those who have no clothing, providing clean water for those who might not have water at all. You're doing that. In 1984, I came to the General Board of Discipleship, and not long after that, I met a lady, a grandmotherly-type lady, whose name was Laura McCrae. Many of you may have known Laura. She was the lay leader at Edge Hill United Methodist Church. She was at conference frequently, and she was everybody's grandmother, let me tell you, everybody's grandmother. In 1982... she was fixing a pot of soup for some new staff members at Edge Hill when two homeless guys came by. And having read the scriptures and knowing Luke 14:12 that Jesus said, when you have a party, don't just invite those that can return the favor. Invite those who have nothing and will never be able to return the favor. So she invited the homeless guys to eat with the church staff. Wasn't long after that that she began fixing soup every week and inviting folks in. It was a one-woman project for a while. First there were 60 and then there were 100. She called it Luke 14:12. It still exists. It left Edge Hill for a while. It was at the Belmont Church. Now it's part of the Campus for Human Development. Twice a week they feed over 300 people. All because a grandmotherly type remembered something Jesus had said and decided that her job was to serve not just those in the church, but those outside the church, those who might not be welcomed within the church sometimes. Minnett and Laura McCrae. I bet you can name your own. You could tell the stories from your own experience of those people who have served you, whom you have seen serve, with whom you have served. Jesus would say, these are the great ones among us. Not the ones you see on television, because you know what? For the most part, those folks who are celebrities now won't be remembered in 100 years. But you know what? Neither Will Minnett nor Laura McCrae. The difference is, Minnett and Laura McCrae didn't do it so people would remember their names. They did it because Jesus told them to do it. It's that simple. They did it because Jesus said to do it, and not only said to do it, he actually did it. Now, in our baptism service, you all renewed your membership vows to be a part of what God was doing in and through this congregation with your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, your service, your service, your service. Can you guess what the emphasis is now? And your witness. Now, we have focused on prayer for a time, and we've focused on presence and gifts, and now during Lent, we're focusing on service. Why? Because it's a membership vow? No, because Jesus told us to do it. It's the only reason we need to focus on it. There are folks out here at Open Table. Every week we're going to offer an opportunity for serving, and this week it's Open Table. You can visit with them after this service out in Reed Hall. These folks are trying to disrupt that cycle that keeps people in poverty, that keeps people homeless. They're trying to educate us on homelessness because, quite frankly, if you're not homeless, you don't know much about it. You just encounter folks who may want spare change, and that's all you know. There's much more to it. And to try to help people find stability in their lives. Now, if you feel led by God that this is a part of the way you will serve, come out and talk to these folks at the table out here. There will be someone each week who will be here from whom we can learn about ways we can serve. This coming Wednesday night, they'll be back. Open Table of Nashville will be back. You can have further conversation. I don't know how God is calling you to serve, but I do know that God is calling you to serve. I know that God is calling me to serve. And why do we do it? Because Jesus told us to. There's no better reason. Thanks be to God.